Living in Appalachia is rough. We deal with violence, gun violence, assault, sexual assault, and rape. And these are things that may be talked about within our podcast. And we just want to let you know, viewer and listener discretion is advised. We live in some of the oldest mountains in the world.
Stolen land, stolen again to create the extraction state.
We are real people talking about real things in a real way.
This is Appalachian Living.
Welcome to Appalachian Living Podcast. This is Elise.
Hello, I'm Lindsay, and we have our producer always, old Tommy Boy.
Howdy.
And today is a very special day, and I'm going to let Elise introduce our guest today.
Our guest is someone I consider a very good friend of mine who has worked a lot on really great stuff in West Virginia, the one and only Rusty Williams. And I am so glad you were able to join us. I think you might be our first actual guest on our podcast by definition. Because Isabel did our first podcast, but she was she interviewed us to kind of lay the basis for who we were. It was a good conversation. And then as far as someone we've invited to come on and talk, you're it. You're number one.
And so. I just read in our description that I had put that we'll have a guest on every time. I'm going to have to fix that.
I'll be your guest.
We'll strive to have
We've
a
always
guest.
Had Tom, and Ricky is That's always right. close
Ricky,
by.
Ricky is always a guest. So
always.
So folks know about us. Rusty, you want to introduce yourself and just tell us what you'd like us to know about you to get kicked off here?
Sure. Well, first of all, I didn't know I was the first guest. That's pretty badass.
I want to say thank you for coming on, too. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for the invite. You know, when I got the text message from Elise talking about the podcast and all that, and she's like, hey, do you want to come on? I'm like, yeah, I don't need to think about this for 2 seconds. Let's do it. Let's talk some shit.
Yes.
We've been talking shit for a long time.
I have, too. I'm so glad we found each other.
Yeah, I think the only thing that was missing was a set of microphones and some headphones. But we've been
talking
this stuff for a long, long time.
So and we're saying the same things. I think that's important to note that, like, we talk about our frustrations and we talk about our situations and we have so many things in common and it resonates so deeply with each other. And you all have a very different story, a shared story than I have with any of you. And that's what is great about what we're doing here is we're not only finding like unique voices, but connecting the commonalities across our age group in this particular place.
Yeah, for sure.
So where are you from? Where do you consider yourself from?
I am from the vast metropolis, otherwise known as Nitro, West Virginia.
Oh. All right.
Where is Nitro? It's just kind of off north Charleston.
Yeah, about 15 miles past Charleston.
Jason Williams country, right?
No, they're on the other side of Charleston, although I did grow up in that same time period. I got to watch them both. Gotcha. They played at Nitro.
You're thinking of Bell.
Yeah, they actually...
I thought they played at Nitro. My bad.
No, they were at Rand. They played Nitro. It was really fun watching them kick the shit out of Nitro.
For sure.
You know, the wildest thing, I'm not really a sports guy, but I remember watching Randy Moss when I was in high school, and that dude was so fast it looked like he could have just stopped and waited on the team to catch up and then just took off again and still
we
smoked everybody.
We saw him at Marshall.
Yeah. We were on a high school field trip.
We went to school together.
We went to school together, but we never spoke to each other during high school.
I was a sophomore. He was a senior.
And now you're together.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like there should be a podcast episode talking about how
our relationship is an entire podcast.
Well, she kept giving me the eye, you know.
We're in the yearbook together. Yeah. I'm sitting down above, or I'm sitting above him over, and then he's like right over there.
And I kept looking.
In the yearbook together.
Yeah, I kept looking back, and this beautiful woman with these deep, you know, bright blue eyes just kept smiling at me. And I was like, maybe I should talk to that girl. And I was very self-conscious at the time. I didn't have the confidence to just go up to, you know.
He was hanging out with a bunch of guys going, Rudy, Rudy,
well,
Rudy.
They had blown out whoever it was. I think Appy State or somebody.
It was Chattanooga.
East Tennessee,
it
something
was Chattanooga.
Like that. Yeah. And they would just blew them out, right? Chad Pennington and Randy Moss. And he caught
it like really wasn't a
nine
game.
Touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we were like, just put Rudy in, right? Let's see what Rudy's going to do. And
it wasn't entertaining after a while. We had to entertain ourselves because he was just, I mean, it was crazy to watch. It really was.
It looked like a grown man was playing against fifth graders.
Every single time.
I mean,
no matter who it was.
It was wild. The wildest thing I've ever seen. But I digress. Anyway,
we're not a sports show.
No, we're not.
My husband likes sports, so we'll throw that in there every once in a while.
Well, we've had some pretty astonishing sports figures come out of these hills. And so every now and then you get a rock star, amazing superstar sports person. Randy Moss was one of those folks who really just
changed the game.
Superhuman ability on that field.
I am from Wyoming County, from Pineville, and we had Kurt Warner growing up.
Nice. I remember my grandfather talking very fondly about growing up around Jerry West. So
Jerry West, yep.
That's pretty wild. When people look at West Virginia, they don't think of this place as like churning out athletes or celebrities or whatever.
Even, but it turns out,
not only do we churn them out, but we turn out some of the best that's ever played the damn game.
Yeah.
Not only that, but when you think about actors and like Don Knotts and Kathy Mattea and musicians and actors who come here, you know, we got some chops, man. We got some chops. And I would count Rusty among some of those superstars.
Personally, in my opinion. You're way overselling it.
So tell us a little bit about your background. Like, what was your childhood like? Did you go to school? You know, give us the story of your life in about I don't know. Take as long as you want, man. We got all day. I got all day until this kid's ready to go. You know.
You know, it's really weird. I don't remember where I came from. I know I crashed a spaceship somewhere in the hills behind the house I grew up in. I've been trying to locate it now for the last 46 years, so I could get off of this crazy spinning space rock that we're all stuck on right now.
As soon as we're done here, I'll go help you.
You know,
if you take us with you, we'll help.
It's been a long time, but I feel like I could still fly the thing.
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, he's a drone pilot.
We're
good.
If it's got buttons and you can operate it, I can figure it out.
We are golden.
He's like Will Smith in Independence Day. Yeah. You know, just turn the paper around. He's like, all right, it's backwards.
We're golden then. We can get off of this space rock today.
Exactly.
I love it.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
No.
First and last guest on our podcast.
Thank you. We're out. Hope you enjoy the broadcast.
They didn't find the spaceship. There will be signs. They won't tell anybody, but there will be signs.
Could we post to the internet from the spaceship, I wonder? Like, I haven't been on it in 46 years, but I feel like...
closer to the satellites.
Yeah. We'd have to hook into SpaceX, though. We'd have to talk to Elon.
Elise is probably regretting...
doing a terrible job of keeping us on task.
Deal's out on that. Like, I'm not messing with any of Elon's bootlicking shenanigans, so I'm out on that. No internet connection. We'll just have to...
We'll just fly blind.
We're stuck here in West Virginia.
No. So given that,
are you regretting introducing me?
Not at all. I think this might be what the world needs, actually.
Exactly. 4 minutes, 5 minutes in, and it's already gone off.
We're aliens. Fine. This is how we do it.
Yeah, we don't script. So, yes, continue, sir.
No, I mean, my childhood was pretty boring, to be honest with you. I was raised in a single parent household. My mom worked her ass off to make sure that me and my younger sister had everything we needed, and made sure that with the resources she had available, she did everything she could to make sure that we didn't go without anything. And
that's a good mom.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you couldn't design a better mom on a computer, right? Like,
yeah.
If you had my mom, really. She put on a master class on how to raise kids in an economically depressed state like West Virginia, right? Mm-hmm. She really did work her ass off to make sure that we had everything we needed and that we never knew how broke we really were, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But, I spent most of my time as a kid on a skateboard. That was all I really cared about when I was growing up.
I got that vibe from you.
Yeah, you know.
I used to hang out with skaters back in the day, right? I never had the balance for it. I tried it for 2 weeks, and I fell so many times that I was like, this is not for me. But
he was a kid on the bike next to the skateboarders.
Right. trying to hang out.
We were all chilling together.
Hey,
we're all part of the same tribe when it comes to that. But, you know, I really started paying attention to politics and just the way things are in the world. And I think the catalyst to that, I remember one morning, it was like 3 a.m. And I got up and I could hear my mom crying, right? And she was sitting at the kitchen table with a stack of bills and an old school adding machine, right? Like doing her thing, sorting it all out. And that was the first time I was like, oh shit, maybe things aren't as awesome, you know, as she's presenting.
See, and my mom cried the first time was when I felt that too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It was heartbreaking, right? Yeah. And but my mom, she's always been very honest and open with me. And you know, when I walked in to check on her, I was in the third grade. I'll never forget it.
I was going to ask you how old you were.
Yeah, third grade. We had just moved to Poca, West Virginia. You know, it's my parents got divorced when I was really little, and you know, we finally got into this nice apartment in Poca. It was really foreign, you know, because kids there weren't like me, right? Like, I mean, I showed up to third grade in like a Metallica t-shirt with my skateboard, right? And that wasn't the vibe back then, right? So, I mean, my mom and my sister, that network, you know, our family, that's what we had. And to see her heartbroken like that over something as trivial as money, right? Like, really kind of broke my heart. And when I asked her what was up, she walked me into the bathroom where we had this full-length mirror, and she got down to my level and looked in the mirror, and she said, "What do you see?" And I was really confused. I was like, "I see us, like you and me. What's up? What am I supposed to see?" She was like, "I want you to think about this. Those people in the mirror, that's all you got. That's who you got to count on. If you want to get something in this world, you count on that person in the mirror to get it for you, because nobody's going to hand you a damn thing."
Truth.
And, I mean, it was a heavy lesson as a third grade kid.
It is.
But I'm so grateful that she instilled that in me at such a young age, because I've always been that way. If I want something in the world, I'll go get it. You know, if it takes a year, if it takes 5 years, if it takes a decade, cool. Mm-hmm. Let's go do the damn thing.
I think the younger you learn that, the easier it'll be.
For sure.
Because if you learn that older, that's because you've been burned how many times? You know, learning that young is
from my
helpful.
Personal experience hearing that story, I imagine that woman and how many people have let her down.
That's what I was thinking.
And now she's got this boy who she needs to teach and understand that you're it.
Mm-hmm.
You're it. And I have an eight-year-old son. He'll be eight in May. And, you know, we've talked about as you grow and learn, things hit you differently. Like that story, I'm sure I knew that story from when we met many years ago, but now I hear it differently because I didn't have a son when we met all those years ago, and now I do. Mm-hmm. And when you have to look at a child and say, shit's tough, you know, it's in some situations the best possible thing you can do for them.
For sure. And it's, I mean, I'm right there with you. I've got a 9-year-old, and, you want to protect them from everything. Right? Like you want to make sure that everything is good and happy and rainbows, but that's not reality, right?
That's
like,
not
I mean,
life.
Especially nowadays, I'm a big believer that in the time of dragons, it's our responsibility to raise dragon slayers, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Amen.
I think in this time, you're not going to be able to keep that kind of information away from kids the way that they were able to keep things from us when we were growing up.
I'm glad you said that. How old are you, Rusty? Because I think it's important for context.
I'll be 47 this year.
47, so you're the same age as us, basically.
I'm 44.
I'll be 46 here in a couple weeks. And
so I'm the old guy in the room.
Just by a little bit. So, you know, I'm not trying to make this about me, because a lot of people take this the wrong way. Like when somebody tells a story, and I've had a similar experience, I try to tell that story, right?
Sure.
And I think a lot of people take that as this guy's trying to make this conversation about him.
But I think it's showing commonalities,
right? And I got a little taste of you know, being at home with a single mother, because when I was 10 years old, my father stood up from the dinner table and said, you know, "You all are too perfect," with tears in his eyes, and he left, right, when I was 10 years old. And so my mother had a 10th grade education, She got pregnant, I think, when she was about 16 with my older brother, which my father was not his biological father, but he raised him. And my brother was much older. He was 15 years older than I was. And so when he left, right, you know, we had had a successful, from the outset, a successful muffler business. My dad ran it, and my mom did the books and was the, you know, like the secretary, did all the, you know, answer the phones and that kind of thing, right? So, yeah, and so he got up and left, and she went to work at Hardee's making biscuits, trying to, you know, pay the bills and keep things up. So I know very well how, what that feels like. And he did wander on back when I was about 13. I was about 12 and a half when he wandered back. And then we moved from Buchanan up in Upshur County, which was where his business was. Before that, he was a coal miner. And so when he came back and they remarried, we moved to Pineville in Wyoming County,
which is where I'm from.
And if you've ever been to Buchanan, okay,
many times, and then been to Pineville,
and then been to Pineville, it's like going from, you know, Earth to Mars, right?
It's a culture shock.
It was a culture shock, and I went from being the poor kid in the class, from being the rich kid in the class, and you know, I had like the skater do where you had like the long
and the top, flannels,
you know, and I wore the flannels and the band t-shirts and, you know, all of that. And all of a sudden there's these you know, mountain boys all around me, and it was a whole different experience, right? So you're telling your story and I'm like, man, I know about all of that.
Did you have to learn to fight the same way?
Well, I had to learn to fight before then because I was always the weird kid, yeah. Right? This didn't just happen here.
He didn't become weird when he met me. No. He was weird before
that. I'm way weirder than she is. I just look like I'm normal, right? Once I start talking and you start to meet me, you're like, this dude is nuts.
Can confirm.
All the best people are.
So, though. Yeah, and I agree. So, you know, I get picked on in school, and, you know, luckily I come from a long line of, you know, rednecks, and I say that in the minor, you know.
In the real redneck context, yes.
Right? And my brother, who was 15 years older than I was, he boxed Golden Gloves down in Oak Hill when he was a young man. And he taught me, you know, boxing, and my dad taught me a few dirty tricks, and you know, I took care of myself. But yeah, I had to fight a couple of guys, you know, and down there you punch one of them in the face and they kind of go down.
Yeah,
the rest of them kind of leave you alone.
100%.
It's kind of like, you know, the first day you go in jail, you got to beat up the bad guy, you know, the biggest guy there, so everybody leaves you alone. That's the way it is, because they're all.
Yeah.
That's interesting to hear, because I grew up in Summers County Schools, which is kind of like West Virginia light. You know, I mean, we had our issues, right? But Summers County generally, we're not in the coal fields. We were more of a touristy area, right? But I always encountered, like, when I just stood up and was like, okay, if I'm going to get my ass whipped right now, I'm going to get it whipped. But when I showed up and was just like, all right, what? Usually that was enough,
yeah.
Right? Like, I never got in fights, but I showed up, you know, and I was ready. And so I feel like that resonates with me. Like, sometimes you just have to knock somebody down.
Sometimes
and be
you
like,
just got to stand up and be like,
I'm not the one.
I'll go 10 and toes with you. And
I'm
then
not
they'll
the
be
one.
Like, no,
yep.
All right.
I feel like that's a very Appalachian way to look at the world too, you know.
Yeah.
I moved to California and lived out there briefly.
Oh wow,
and,
that's talk about culture shock.
You know, it wasn't though.
Really,
I expected it to be culture shock. And
where in California?
Yeah, what part? I moved to San Francisco. I went there to visit. Well,
she's it would be from Pineville, West Virginia. That would be culture shock for me. So
I'm sure for most people it probably would have been culture shock, but I don't know, for some reason I went there for a week. You know, I was supposed to be there on a week's vacation, and I liked the place so much I canceled my flight and just stayed. I have never been anywhere that I felt that comfortable that quickly. You know, and I think it was because we'd gone to a restaurant the first day I was there, and I was just sitting there eating my food, and I'm listening to all these conversations happening around me, and they're all happening in different languages, and I'm just looking around like, this is the way it's supposed to be, right?
Beautiful.
Like, yeah, I mean, it felt like people got along better in San Francisco than any place I'd ever been, and I wanted that, right? Yeah. Like, because like you said, I mean, I grew up the same way. I was always the outcast, right? Like, I wasn't into sports. So, you know, I mean, people had shit to say about that, right? Like, I wasn't into, I wasn't the one that was going out chasing girls all weekends, you know, in high school. I didn't have any confidence. That wasn't my intention. I wanted to ride my skateboard and play my guitar and be left alone, right?
But, you know, it's not a bad thing at all, you know, but they make you feel like that's a bad thing when you're growing up because you're not, you know, out doing whatever everybody else is doing.
Right. You know, and I didn't drink, I didn't party, I didn't do any of those things. So it's like literally all the things that my peer group were laser focused on, I could not have possibly cared less about. I actually was focused on, and I think a lot of this had to do with the music that I liked. You know, I credit, people ask all the time, how did you get radicalized, right? Like, because I'm considered to be a pretty radical person in my peer group, right? Like, I'm so far to the left, I really like to go to the range and shoot guns frequently, right?
Yes.
That's where I fall on the political spectrum.
There you go.
But, you know, I got into, I'll never forget this as long as I live. Music is really what radicalized me and shaped the way that I look at this world. And I think my uncle is probably the one responsible for that. We were at his house for a cookout. I was like, I mean, it was around the same period of time, you know, third grade or whatever. And I was listening to some Poison cassette, right, in a Walkman. He comes in and he's like, what are you listening to? And I pulled it out. It's like Poison, Look What the Cat Dragged In. And his face immediately looked like someone shit in the floor. Right? He was just like,
aww.
What are you like?
That's disappointing.
Yeah, he was like, "You're listening to this
kid something."
Yeah, he's like, "You're listening to this on purpose." And I'm like, "Yeah, man, this is the jam, right?" And he put the cassette up on the stereo and hit rewind on the cassette deck. And when, you know, finished, he took a tape out and put it in my Walkman. He was like, "Come find me in an hour and let me know what you think." And it was Black. Black Sabbath. Okay. We Sold Our Soul for Rock and Roll.
All right.
And I was done. As soon as I heard this, I was like, oh, shit. Okay. This is my vibe right here, which led me into other bands like Metallica. But I got into Anthrax, right? Anthrax had some really, really socially relevant lyrics that I think people missed, right? Like, I mean, they get credit for being this thrash band or whatever. But the things that Joey Belladonna was saying, I didn't even fully understand when I was a kid, but I knew it meant something, right? Like, I was like, this is, you know, he was talking about, you know, sexism in America and racism in America and things like that, that my little third grade brain was blown. Well, that led me into, as a teenager, I remember I was sitting up one night watching 120 Minutes. You remember that show on MTV? And they played the world premiere video for Rage Against the Machine, Freedom. And that changed my entire life. It really did. You know, the whole video is detailing, and it's not just them playing, right? Like, it's telling the story about Leonard Peltier and how he ended up in jail. And that just woke me up. I started learning about Leonard Peltier, learning about Mumia Abu-Jamal and all of these, you know, political prisoners. And I was like, wow, this country's kind of fucked, right? Like, what can we do to sort this out? And while my friends were focused on, hey, I'm going to go talk to this girl, I'm like, I'm going to Columbus this weekend and meeting up with the anti-racist action, and we're going to see what kind of drama we can start, right?
Nice. Do you see now why I consider Rusty like a political soulmate?
Because I was one of those people that was just worried about getting high.
You know, and I mean,
you know, my whole 20s, I beat the hell out of my body, you know?
And I think that also is, it's a common thing here, I'm a firm believer just in the advocacy work that I've done. There's a false narrative in West Virginia, right? Like we hear a lot about an opioid epidemic, which we do have. But that's only a very small piece of that conversation. Like we have an addiction epidemic here, right? Like some of the highest binge drinking rates, some of the highest tobacco use rates. Like
addiction is not just opiates.
No, I live less than 3 miles from here and I'll pass a handful of gambling spots on my way to the house, right? Like, I mean, addiction is an issue here, but I feel like that's the plight of the economically depressed people.
Of course.
Keep people in such financial dire straits that every waking moment is focused on keeping a roof over your head and food in the refrigerator,
right.
You're going to reach out for whatever it is that makes you feel better.
Get that dopamine somehow.
Yeah,
you fill your cup with whatever bitter brew you're drinking.
Bitter brew you're drinking.
And it's generational trauma 100%. At the same time,
yes.
Right? This entire state has been through so much trauma, and it's it perpetuates, right? If your father was a drinker and you know took some drugs, then you're more likely to be a drinker or a drugger, and it's passed from generation to generation, and that lifestyle, right, is a part of our identity.
It is, and you know that's a part. Actually, you know when you were sharing the story there about when your dad left, similar story, right? On my 8th birthday, Dad came home. I don't know where the fuck he was earlier that day, but I know my mom was literally pulling out the birthday cake from the oven, right? I've got a handful of friends in the front yard, right? Like I had friends over for a sleepover. And my dad came in and took his wedding ring off and threw it on the kitchen table. And he told my mom,
birthday.
Like literally, I was 2 feet away. He's like, I don't love you anymore. I'm out. And he fucked off, right? So
wow.
And I didn't realize it at the time. I was just upset and pissed off that that had just happened, especially on my birthday, right?
Yeah. Like
but my mom, she put that game face on, and she made sure that, you know, none of those kids knew.
What a warrior.
Yeah, I mean, my mom's a gangster. Like,
is your mother still alive?
Yeah, hell yeah. She'll listen to this podcast.
I would love it, won't she?
Yeah,
shout out to Rusty's mom.
Yes.
You're the MVP.
Okay? Absolutely.
She really is. She really is. You know, so many times we could
Rusty's
sit here
mom.
And talk for an hour about my mom, right? Like, because, I mean, it's so many times when she could have just washed her hands with it, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, she could have just given up and jumped on government assistance and said, you know, this is my life. Mom wasn't about that. She was like, I mean, and I'm not saying that we didn't. We used whatever we needed at the time, right?
Sure.
But my mom was always the kind of person that if you find yourself in a hole, number one, stop digging. And number two, figure out how to get your ass out of that hole.
And use whatever you can.
Whatever you can.
Whatever
right?
you can, whatever resources you have at your disposal, you use.
Yeah, so that's how she was, right?
Yeah.
But I know that, like, now that I'm older and I understand, you know, the dynamics of addiction and all, my dad's an alcoholic. And, you know, that addiction basically, and I'm not going to say that, you know, that's responsible. Ultimately, he's a grown-ass adult. You're responsible for the decisions you make. But it controlled his life, and it ultimately ruined it, right?
Yeah.
So I saw that from a very early age. And one thing, when I was very little, I was like, you know what? I don't know where I'm going in this world or what's going to happen, but I'm not going down that path, right? So I feel like I have done a tremendous amount of work just, you know, in the 46 years I've been here to break that generational curse. Because, you know, if you ever see me with a glass of alcohol in my hand, either 1,000 things have gone wrong or somebody asked me to hold their drink while they went to the bathroom or some shit. I promise you it's not mine, right? Like, I've just never wanted any part of that. But, it's like, that's not just, you're not the first person that I've talked with about this that's had similar stories, and those generational traumas and generational curses are so prevalent here in Appalachia. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, I mean, we've just been beat down by every entity that's ever come in here and said, we're going to do this to help. They've never really done that. They've always exploited us for everything we got and send the resources right out the door and left us to pick the pieces up. Right.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, I think that's, That's why we're dealing with the addiction epidemic that we're dealing with.
And yeah. I had to do a lot of work personally to break that curse as well. You know, I wasn't as disciplined and good as you were. And I wish I had, right? I saw a picture of myself maybe 15 years ago yesterday, and I was so angry at that person.
It was hard to look at those photos.
I was so angry at that person because it's not at all who I am today. And I tell people that I had to kill my former self because he didn't serve me. And, you know, that's just what you have to do. And either you do that work or you lean into that generational trauma and the band-aids and the crutches that your father and his father and maybe their mother you know, fell into. And it's just an interesting thing. And I hope that some West Virginians here are waking up from this trauma and trying to do the work. And you know, I'm one of them, right? And and I had a similar experience. I had a friend of mine when I was shortly after my dad left. He was a kid of mixed race, right? And I think he had heard my dad say something one time, overheard. And he, you know, my dad is not really this way these days, right? But he had different ideas back then, and he was a different man. And I want to let everybody know that he did that work.
He did.
My dad is
that's incredible.
My dad is wonderful, a totally different person than he was when I was 10.
Good for him.
And
he's like my second father.
He's a fantastic guy. He, you know, I love my dad more than anything. He's going through chemo, and I shaved my head for dad. And I need to call him. But
speaking of dad,
my friend handed me two cassette tapes, and they were two Public Enemy albums.
Yes.
And it was Fear of a Black Planet and Apocalypse 91, The Enemy Strikes Black, right? And I heard songs like Don't Trust It that talk about, you know, the hundreds of years that, you know, slaves were brought to America and how, you know, then, you know, these things perpetuate, right? And I identified with that despite being a little white boy, right? Because of things that have happened to us generationally here in this state. And I'm not minimizing, and listen, it wasn't slavery, right? But the thought of being oppressed, I knew about that.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And, you know, because my mother came from the Kingston coal camp. My dad was born in Scarborough. And so they both came up through the coal camp system and, you know, paid for their lunches and scrip and, you know, those kind of things. Right. So I made those connections and I said, those people are no different than I am. And that was the first time that I realized, you know, that we're all brothers and sisters here on this earth, and we are no different than anybody else. And everybody deserves the American dream to be alive and free and able to express themselves and be successful and be happy
and pursue their happiness.
In the pursuit
right.
of happiness.
We're all humans. I swear there's
so much of our stories overlap. Public Enemy is another artist.
Your parallel
that really,
lives are really starting to freak me out a little
really,
bit.
Weird. It's freaking me out too. You know, I had those same records when I was a kid. Yeah. I still listen to them today. As a matter of fact, the reason that I have not deleted the app, the dumpster fire formerly known as Twitter, off of my phone.
Yeah.
Chuck D follows me on Twitter. Oh. And
you can't let it go.
Oh, I can't let it go.
What was it? I almost wore my Bismarcky shirt today.
Yeah.
When baby boy.
When I got the notification that Chuck D had followed me, I almost passed out. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, Chuck D, that's the man.
It's a big deal.
That is the man.
Chuck D played a huge role in shaping the way I look at this world.
Yeah, for sure.
For the same reason, you know, like I didn't have that same world experience that they were talking about, but I understood oppression and, right. You know, and just being able to connect. I mean, to me, Public Enemy, you don't get much better than Public Enemy.
No, And by the time I get to Arizona,
oh my God,
is one of my favorite all time songs.
Yes.
You know, Neither Party Is Mine, not the Jackass or the Elephant.
Oh yeah.
And I'm
on a one mission still, to get a politician to honor.
Yeah.
That he's a goner by the time I get to Arizona.
Yeah.
I just got to say, I'm gonna interrupt because I've got a limited time on my phone video wise. But what just happened here is so amazing. and
are we best friends?
I believe so. You want to go practice karate in the garage?
Let's go.
I think though it just shows.
Call me Dragon.
It's kind of the reason we're doing this is to show that like when you talk to each other in our communities, like when you actually sit down and start telling your stories, all of a sudden we're like this, right? Like we are like,
we have the same stories.
We have the common stories and the common backgrounds. Now your alls is a little weirder than most.
Oh, yes. Because the parallels are a little off.
But
a little odd. They'll freaking me out.
Yeah. But the stories of oppression, Rusty and I touched on this a little bit when we had some one-on-one time while we were getting the other stuff set up, that you know, we are the descendants of those folks they bombed on Blair Mountain. You know, we are the people who carry those stories. I was indoctrinated with the Union. My dad, I knew what Blair Mountain was before I knew what four-wheel drive was. You know, like, and I grew up in the mountains, and you know what four-wheel drive is when you grow up in the mountains, right? But it was important for him to put that there in my mind and plant that and say, that's who we are. That's where we come from. That's such an important part of our story. And then you hear these men who have grown up in this environment, and music and art is what blows their world wide open. And all of a sudden, that's what connects them to the people who made this and are telling the stories of their ancestors and their stories of oppression. So I'm just amazed that, you know, what I'm hearing, the layers and overlapping of commonality. And then to find that much commonality in two people is a little weird, but that's just how it works with Rusty. Welcome to Rusty Williams, ladies and gentlemen. It's just the magic that is.
I know. And then speaking of commonalities, me and him have commonalities now.
When did you get back to West Virginia, though? Because if you were in California as a young man, right?
Well, I moved out there in 2003, and I was back in 2007. Yeah, I was only there for 4 years.
But enough to, you know, recognize that that felt good. What brought you back?
A family. My sister had her first kid, and I didn't like listening to and watching my nephew grow up over the internet. You know, I tried like hell to talk my family into moving to California. they weren't receptive to that idea, unfortunately.
You mean they wouldn't just pick up their whole lives just to?
No, most people are way too chicken shit to do that. But I'm telling you, you know, I really feel
that's
amazing. Something everybody should do at least once. Just sell all your shit and pack up and go somewhere else. You know,
you're a stranger, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that it goes. I didn't have those hangups, right? Like, I'm very fortunate. I grew up in a house where homophobia was not acceptable. You know, sexism was not acceptable. Mom wasn't going to let any of that shit fly.
Nope. My mother was the same.
My mom.
Which was, you know, a lot of the reason why I am the way I am, you know, now. You know, my father was a little different, but, you know, again, not the same man. My mom spent time in Detroit.
Yeah, she lives in Motown.
New Jersey.
You
know, she lived in Detroit for a while with my brother when he was little, and he went to school. His kindergarten was in Detroit.
Going to different places.
For sure.
You know, we moved to Florida, And we were looking at the photos of us in Florida, and Ricky was in kindergarten and preschool. And we were looking around, we're like, we are the only white people around.
Yeah. You know, and that experience, that is what is missing from so many people here.
My job, I was the only white girl, and I was a case manager at a juvenile detention center. There was maybe two white kids. Now, let me tell you, the white kid was the one that choked out the therapist, stole her keys and her car, and because when I came to work the next day, I had to get completely searched to make sure the kid wasn't in my car.
You know, I can get real philosophical on all this shit. Yeah. You know?
But, you know, I think having that experience of being the minority is helpful for someone to grow as a person.
Well, it's easy to, to form prejudice or to buy into stereotypes when you've never had to sit down and have a face-to-face conversation with whatever the marginalized group it is that you're focused on.
Right.
Yeah.
It's hard to hate somebody that's sitting across the table from you, opening up and sharing their human experience with you, right?
Yeah.
No matter how foreign it may be. And I think we're seeing that right now, you know, with all of the attacks on the transgender community, which to me flies counter to everything we are as West Virginians.
I think so, too.
You know, it's absolute bullshit. But I think that, you know, a lot of these folks, they've never sat down and had a conversation with a transgender person. They have no idea what that world experience is like.
And they may not even know if they had.
Exactly.
And I saw it in real time. Like, I saw this happen. I'm the advocacy director at the ACLU of West Virginia, right? So I'm engaged in this work. This is what I do for a living. And last year, during our legislative lobby day, one of our organizers brought a group of transgender youth. I think they were mostly college students, and these kids were freaked out, right? Like, they're in this arena where they've just been constantly attacked, right? Mm-hmm. But I have to give them all the credit in the world, because they wanted to engage lawmakers. They wanted to have these conversations. So I was asked, hey, can you set up some meetings? And, you know, it's kind of hard to set up a meeting within minutes, right? But we were fortunate to get an audience with the then chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And I watched this man's mind change. I watched it happen in real time. We sat in his office for about an hour, and these students shared their experiences and what they had dealt with, you know, as high school students, and the discrimination that they'd faced here in West Virginia. And he was tearing up. And he straight up said, every lawmaker in this building needs to hear from you.
Yeah.
Everyone in here needs to hear your experience. And this man came out the very next day and introduced a bill to add gender orientation and sexual identity to the Human Rights Act. Right? Like, it took one conversation.
Yeah.
One
conversation. One face-to-face conversation.
Yeah. And I think that's what's missing in today's political discourse, right? Like, I know we talked about sports earlier. This may be the most controversial statement I say on the podcast. It pisses a lot of people off. But I think our obsession with sports is really fucking up the way we conduct life.
Can I get an amen?
You know, it's like when you're in school, right? Like, well, like Nitro and St. Albans, right? That was the rivalry. Well, fuck St. Albans. We're going to kill St. Albans, right? Like, that's the enemy. No, that was just a bunch of kids playing football.
Right.
Right? Like, that's all it is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it gets to college, WVU, Pitt, you know, fuck Pitt, blah, blah. No, again, that's a bunch of kids playing right. football, yeah. playing a game that yeah. doesn't mean shit.
And not know? Even not from really. Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it means nothing in the yeah. grand scheme of things.
WVU is a bunch of kids from New Jersey and Florida.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And none of them from West Virginia.
Not a whole bunch. No. That's true.
But that focus on my team versus your team, you know,
winner,
you're the enemy,
loser.
Winner,
which side
loser.
Are you on?
It's all that horse shit yeah. that, you know, it really fucks up the way we talk to each other, because, yeah. you know, I watch it happen. I'll be 47 this year. I've been following politics since I was about 10. And I remember vividly a time when you could get the most left-leaning politician and the most right-leaning politician to sit down at a table, find common ground. Neither one of them are going to leave happy,
right.
but they could find common ground to push, you know, some sort of real-world solution to hopefully, you know, make whatever the issue was better for everyone, right? Now, it's so fucking toxic that, you know, if – this leftist has a great idea that's going to make things better for everyone. Well, the right, we can't support it because it came simply from this crazy fucker, right? Yeah. Like, and nothing gets done.
It's so frustrating to even...
And even as recently as 10 years ago in the legislature with things like force pooling bills, and, you know, I had personal experience, we had a coalition of people that was everybody from Tea Partiers to union boilermakers. And when we sat down, I would say, we can only talk about one issue at this table because there's only one issue we're here to discuss. But that coalition was very successful because they focused on the thing that they had in common, and they all cared very deeply about your own property, your personal property rights and real property rights in this state. And when they focused on it, they were hugely successful in what they did. But somebody has to kind of, I had to frame that for them out of the gate and say, we can't get bogged down in our disagreements. They don't matter.
Right.
They don't matter right now. What matters is the thing that matters, and we need to focus on it. But I agree, and amen from me too, that this sports and not, there's not a sense now that we come home from the game and decompress and we come home and think about the next game and how to do it, you know, harder and better next time and how to win next time. You know, there's not that, isn't the pastime anymore. For a lot of kids, those sports events are their career. They're hoping that their ticket out is as a Randy Moss or as a Michael Vick or as a, you know, some rock star that's going to come in and, you know, do amazing things on the field or on the basketball court or on the baseball field. And that's another big issue I see is, you know, if you don't want to go into the military in this state, which a number of our youth do for both educational purposes, travel purposes, career purposes, sports is the other thing. You know, they want their teams. Marshall and WVU are big sports teams. They're nationwide recognizable sports teams, right? What other options are there for us here besides mine and Cole? And the reality is if you look generationally, a lot of our generation fell out because of what happened in the late 90s and early 2000s. Their kids are impacted, their parents are impacted, and they had to ship in a lot of out-of-state workers to take the jobs that would be here for the people our age who would otherwise be working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so there are so many layered dynamics that go to this, but sports and how we engage and how we value sports over other things is a really important part of this conversation. And don't get me wrong, I mean, high school football is a lifeblood for a lot of people around here. It means a lot.
It's entertainment, it's fun, and it gives the kids something to do, keeps them out of drugs. I totally agree with that. Nobody's saying anything is wrong with sports.
Sure.
And I come in the comments if you want to. But nobody's hating on sports. My no. kid was in the Special Olympics. So
and won gold medal,
the
we
fuck
might add.
Up, okay? I'm just saying that, you know, we put way too much emphasis on it. And I was, so my kid has special needs, and we've never had those kind of experiences. I'm not a soccer mom, right? I'm a special needs mom. We go to therapies. We don't go to practice. But he did the Special Olympics. But as a parent, going to practice, going to the games, doing this, it's a lot. It's a lot for the parents. Mm-hmm. And then they had the Wyoming County. We didn't even mention this, but Wyoming County, both of their high schools were in the playoffs. And so they canceled school. Like, we hadn't had school from the floods. Like, since Christmas, we've barely been to school. But both high schools are in the playoff. So the whole county just, you know, didn't go to school.
Can you imagine the whole county engaging on any other issue?
Right. I was
any
just going to say,
other issue?
What would happen if the entire county showed up at the legislature and said, you know, we're not leaving this building until every single resident of McDowell County has clean water falling from their tap.
Right? I mean, I really wish it would happen that way, because I have been down there in Wyoming County at Indian Creek saying, this water's poison. This water stinks. This water is killing people. And people in the community are like, y'all are crazy. This isn't true. They're just blah, blah, blah. I'm like, why? Come with me. Because you can see it in the creek. You can smell it.
It's priorities.
You're gaslighting me and telling me that I am wrong, and I am not wrong. And I don't know how many people have told me, you're wrong. bitch, I'm not.
Right.
I'm not. And so any of y'all that have told me I'm wrong, I'm not. And I'm just going to throw that out there because I think I'm in a room full of people that can back me up on that.
For well, sure.
If you think she's wrong, come on down.
Come on down.
Yeah, I mean, you are more than welcome to come and hang out with me, and I'll show you anything that you want
to
see.
I'll bring you down to Indian Creek, and we'll see the poison water coming out of the ground.
Yeah, and you know, and it's simple. That's a common thread throughout the state, right? Like, I grew up right down yonder in the heart of Chemical Valley, right? Like, that's where I'm from.
Yes.
And when I was diagnosed with cancer and was going through all that shit, after my ride was over, they thought the cancer had spread to my lungs, right? So they sent me to, he's actually Senator Tacubo, serves in the legislature as my pulmonologist. And they found nodules in both lungs. And I'm panicking, right? Like, well, that's not good. So testicular cancer doubles in size every 7 to 10 days when it's growing. So they found them. They were like, we're going to give you 2 weeks, and then we want you to come back in. We're going to scan you again. So I went back in, 2 weeks, terrified, right? They scanned me. Nodules look exactly the same as they did on the first scan, right? So my doctor's like, nothing to worry about. Again, I was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder when I was a kid. You can't just tell me, hey, you got nodules in your lungs, but it's nothing to worry
about.
But
you're okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, no, I need to see all the fucking data that shows me why I shouldn't worry about this, because I'm a little worried.
Right? I am too. I need to know all the information. What is it? Where'd it come from? How'd it get there?
Well, he said, and it was very matter of fact, he said, Rusty, you grew up in Nitro? I said, yes, sir. He said, if I did scans on 100 lifelong residents of Nitro, I'm going to find nodules in 88 of them.
Oh my God.
He said, that's just the reality, right? Well, for a little more context, the garden, our family garden, right? Like, I used to love tending the garden with my grandpa when I was a kid. Like, I loved grabbing radishes right out of the ground, dipping them in a cup of water, and just smashing them, right? Like, the radishes never made it into the house because I'd eat them all in the fucking field. So they're building it's now the Robert C. Byrd boat launch in Nitro, right? That was about 100 yards from our family garden. But when they start clearing this land and preparing everything, you know, to go in and do the thing and build the boat launch, they had found that Monsanto, who, you know, used to have their headquarters in Nitro, had buried so many barrels of chemicals over there that it took the Army Corps of Engineers like 2 years to clean the site before they could finish the project. That was 100 yards from the family garden, right? Like, so, you know, people are like,
oh my God.
I really want to just bang my head on this table right now.
Does cancer run in your family?
Yeah, it runs in my whole neighborhood.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know if it runs through the family, but it definitely runs through the fucking garden.
Yeah.
You know? Right. So, I mean.
And so you can't even feed yourself.
Yeah. There's no escaping it.
And that's what has scared me, because I want to build a food forest where I'm at. And I'm not where it is. I'm about 2 miles upstream.
Let me just point out, you're not where the poison water is coming out of the ground right there.
I'm 2 miles upstream from it.
You are right below a mountaintop removal coal mine and a brand new road project.
Yeah.
Right. A part of the Coalfield Expressway. When I go to your house, I'm in it. So don't say you ain't in it.
Please explain where I am, because I, you know, to me, that's my home, and I'm just like, oh,
you don't see it as,
hey, it's not coming through my faucet, so I'm a lucky one.
You're in it.
You know, but I am right. I can hear the explosions. I feel my house shake. I drive my kid to school and I smell it because it's on the way. It's a mile from my house.
Yeah. And if you're downwind, you can smell it at the house.
If the wind's coming this way, you can smell it. And I've always been worried. I'm like, is this going to be seeping into my garden? Am I trying to be healthy in my garden, but yet killing myself at the same time? And that's always worried me, but I'm still going to be growing food. That's the only thing I know to do.
Yeah. You know, I mean,
you know,
and I think that's
5 minutes of camera on this camera.
Okay. Now you were diagnosed with testicular cancer.
Mm-hmm.
How old?
I was 33.
How did you find out?
I woke up on Mother's Day in 2012.
Boy, you are just all on like the special days, like the holidays, the birthdays.
I win the award for all time.
Watch out for this kid on Christmas, y'all. Yeah.
Aren't you born on Halloween?
I mean, really?
No. Close to
Halloween.
My hot water heater bust on Halloween one
well,
time.
Well, fun fact about that, I wasn't born on Halloween, but when my mom and dad got married, my mom said that she was going to wait 4 years to have a kid, and I was born on their fourth wedding anniversary. So, not Halloween, but fucking weird anyways.
Pretty close.
Yeah, but no, I woke up on Mother's Day in 2012 in the most excruciating pain I'd ever been in my life. Like, I literally felt like somebody had stomped me in my sleep.
And you hadn't felt anything before that?
No pain. No, I mean, I was tattooing for a living at the time, so, I mean, I was used to sitting in a chair for hours a day.
Right.
No pain, no issues whatsoever, and I woke up. I mean, I couldn't walk. So I tried to play it off, right? Like, I went to my mom's house for Mother's Day dinner, and I was trying to just, you know, be the big dude and not project what I was feeling. Yeah. And
right.
Be strong for mama.
Yeah, mom's, she's
because she was strong
way
for
too
you.
Savvy. Her emotional intelligence is way too
sure
high for that
bullshit. Oh, I'm sure she saw your face and what, as soon as you...
So I had walked out. At the time, I was still smoking cigarettes, and I had walked out on the deck to smoke, and she came out. She's like, "What's wrong with you today?"
I bet she knew as soon as she saw your face.
Yeah, she knew immediately. She was like, "I know you're trying to cover something." She was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Not really. Like, I'm in a lot of pain. It's a struggle to stand here." Mm-hmm. And she's like, "You need to go to the hospital." I didn't have insurance. I was like, "I don't want to go to the hospital. I want to end up paying a bill for the next 6 months, you know, that I can't afford."
You were 37?
I was 33.
So yeah. This was over 10 years ago?
Yeah, this was 2012. This was before the, and you know, this all happened before the first tiers of the Affordable Care Act had been implemented.
Yes.
So they could still discriminate against you for having pre-existing conditions and all those things.
That,
so,
yeah.
You know, she told me, she's like, "All I want for Mother's Day is for you to go to the emergency room." I'm like, "Well, fuck, now I have to go."
Now you have to go.
You can't say no to mama.
Yeah, so I go, and within an hour of you know, checking in there, they, you know, the hospitalist came out and said, it was real, like, I mean, I felt like he was handing me a menu at Cracker Barrel or some shit. He was like, "Oh, Mr. Williams, I'm 99% sure you have testicular cancer. We're going to give you some pain meds, and you'll see a specialist sometime in the next 7 to 14 days. Have a good day." And then he fucked off. And I'm like,
wow, what a bedside manner.
Yeah, well, that's the, like, it's pretty hard to shake me off of my resolve. I've always been that way my whole life. Like, I mean, hell, when the oncologist, because the next morning I got a call and they were like, "You need to come in today."
Yeah.
And they sent me to
when they call you the next morning and say you need to come in, you know, that's
yes. So they sent me to the urologist and he's like, "You know, Mr. Williams, I don't know, there's no easy way to say this, but it's confirmed, you have testicular cancer and it's bad." And the first thing out of my mouth, my mom's crying, right? And I'm like, "Well, that fucking sucks." And he sat back in the chair and he's like, "That's all you have to say?" And I was like, "Well, it does.
What else can you say?
What do we do about it?"
Well, right? Is there a book that of instructions on what to say when someone tells you that you have cancer?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm like, "Well, whatever." And, you know, he looked at my mom, who was broken at this moment.
Oh,
he's
my
like,
gosh, yeah. I can only imagine.
Yeah, and I'm calming her down. I'm like, "Mom, it's all good."
Right.
"We'll get it sorted, right?"
But
like,
mama's,
it's going to be what it is.
I'm
but,
okay with that if I have cancer, but my kid, I'll lose my shit.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I understand that now.
Yeah.
I didn't have it. You know, there were no kids in
my
life.
Yeah, that was a long time
ago. I was like,
ago,
you know what? I'm good. We'll sort this out. But, you know, he looked at my mom and he's like, "Is he always like this?" She's like, "Pretty much." And he said, "Well, if you keep that attitude, you're going to be fine."
Yeah, the attitude is a big thing. That's what they said to me.
Well, then he's like, "You need emergency surgery. Like, I would like to do it." And I'll never forget this statement either. He said, "I'd like to do it immediately, but I'm not doing it this weekend because I have tickets to see Dave Matthews Band and I'm not going to pass it up." And I'm just like,
have you ever been able to hear Dave Matthews Band again?
No, every time
same way?
I couldn't hear it the first before then, but now I hear it and I'm like, man, fuck that guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck you, Dave Matthews.
Yeah. Then they dump shit in the river in Chicago. So yeah, fuck Dave Matthews. But anyways, you know, that all happened.
I don't think they'll ever sponsor this podcast.
Then the next thing, he's like, but we got to sort out, you don't have insurance, we got to sort out how you're going to pay for it. So they literally just said, you need emergency surgery, it's bad, how are you going to pay for it?
Welcome to America.
Yeah, yeah, the land of the fucking free, right? Yeah. So
as long as you can pay for it.
Yeah, at the time, you know, they did a full body scan, and there was a tumor in my right testicle. That was it, right? So I spent 6 weeks fighting bureaucrats when I should have been fighting cancer, right? I got denied for Medicaid because I made too much money at the tattoo shop. I didn't make enough to afford insurance, but I made too much to get any help.
You couldn't just do a self-pay and be like, I'll pay you $5 every month.
I couldn't afford to do it. I mean, it was...
They wouldn't even let you do that?
No, it was... I had to get
probably tens of thousands of dollars to even get him into the surgery. Yeah,
yeah, so...
And I guess they would want like $1,000...
A surety or a guarantee or something.
They never even told me anything. Like, they're like, no, you need to sort this out. And they gave me information for the Social Security Administration and the DHHR, right? So Medicaid turns me down. I start the process again. They turn me down again. Start the process again. They turn me down a third time. So on the third time, and keep in mind,
this is how long?
It took about 6 weeks. Every step I took felt like I was getting kicked again. Every step, like my oncologist told me,
my cancer is growing at every time. Yeah.
And this is the balls, y'all.
Yeah,
I know you ladies don't know what we're talking about here, but if you got pain in your balls.
It's acute
that's
and intense.
Real.
They told me that the pain I experienced would have been the equivalent of being in labor with twins for 6 weeks.
I believe it.
That's what they said.
Now, see, I didn't have pain.
And
I wasn't
you
in pain.
Shared with me, and I hope you don't mind that I point out here, that you considered suicide
a
number of times in those 6 weeks. And I think that that struck me and stuck with me, that like the agony you're in is the agony you're in. And you're thinking about handling it yourself.
If my mom would not have been here, after the first time they denied me, I would have checked myself out smooth. I mean, that's where my head was. And again, I can't put into words how much pain I was in.
Right.
Right? I mean, it was awful.
Because
seemingly out of options.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't understand, if you all have never not had insurance and had a life threatening disease cancer or something like that, and you don't understand.
You need emergency surgery, but you have to pay for it first, and it took over 6 weeks to get your emergency surgery. Yeah.
And there's seemingly nothing you can do.
Nothing.
Right? Like, I mean, what are you going to do?
At the mercy of whatever is out there.
Yeah. I mean,
die a painful death?
Yep.
That's that, you know, or do I end it right here? And that's a rock and a hard place if I've ever heard one. And man.
Well, I'll never forget this day either. The third day I got denied, the third time I got denied, right? I was told everything's in line, right? You got to take this form from the Social Security Administration to your doctor. When you turn this paperwork in, they'll give you they're going to schedule your surgery. You'll leave the hospital with a surgery date. And I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, finally, right? So I jumped through all the hoops they asked me to jump through. And when I went to the doctor that day, you know, I knocked on the little window and she opened it up. She's like, can I help you? All bubbly. I'll never forget, like, the inflection. I can still hear the inflection in her voice. And I gave her the paperwork, told her who I was. She was like, thank you, honey, and she shut the window. So I'm standing there for a few seconds. I knock on it again, and she opened it. She was like, do you need something else? I was like, yeah, I was told that when this all gets processed that I'll have my surgery date. And I'm just curious, like, what's that timeline looking like? She goes, can you pay for it? And I'm like, what, like with cash? No. She goes, honey, until you can pay for it, everything's been put on hold. But you have a nice day. And she shut the window in my face, right?
Is there a word for that?
Oh, it was a very steady nonchalance. Like, nothing, I've never experienced anything like that before or since. But I
callous? Callous? Inhumane?
I
mean,
I mean, all of those things. I have one, but it's very vulgar. That's the C word that's four letters long that is in all of her heads. She got it. She picked it up.
Oh, no, I'm pretty sure I said that before I fucked off. I'm pretty sure I said that out loud.
You said, isn't there a word for that? Of course there's a word for that, and we can't say it. We're not going to. But
well,
yeah.
I thought maybe there was, you know.
Do you have another?
Like a real... like definition.
Well, callous and inhumane.
Like when someone's like, you know, just so nice, telling you, you know, you're gonna die. Have a nice day.
Well, when I went home and told my gangster mom about what happened,
so she's like,
she jumped on a phone call.
No. And,
the word that you could use to apply to that little bitch was unemployed.
Oh,
because she did lose her job for that.
Good.
But, you know, I went home that day and I had to, I called a family meeting, right? Like, it was just me and my mom and my stepdad and my sister. And I was like, look, y'all got 4 months. They told me I have 4 months to live. So that's what you got. I am not pursuing this anymore. This is the third time I've been denied. I am not trying to fight bureaucrats anymore. Fuck these people. And I told him, I was like, I'm going to smoke as much weed as I can possibly smoke. I'm going to write as many metal songs as I can write. And I'm checking the fuck out of this place, right?
Peace.
Again.
At 33.
My gangster mom wasn't having any part of
that. Mom ain't going to let you go that easy.
Well, she kept making calls, and turns out we had a good friend who worked at the DHHR who was trying to help us, and she pointed us in the direction of the West Virginia Tiger Morton Catastrophic Illness Commission. And within a week of contacting them, my surgery was scheduled, and I had Medicaid coverage.
Wow.
Those people saved my fucking life, and... I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but
no, please.
2 years ago in the legislative session, the Catastrophic Illness Commission had typically operated annually with a budget of $1 million, and they cut their budget by 90%. So now that entity is running on a $100,000 a year budget.
Thank you for that information, because I think that's a follow up. Given the nature of the toxicity of our environment and the nature, I mean, this is Monsanto's bill, in my opinion, but I digress.
Yeah. Well, Monsanto also, my grandfather passed away from mesothelioma from working in Monsanto. So, yeah, I feel like those fuckers should probably
pay up a little bit. I think that's a really important point that, like, I don't think they understand the demand for catastrophic healthcare needs driven by industry in our state, and to cut that is like a further F you to everybody here who has to live in these places.
One thing I will say, though, to that, there was a bill introduced 2 years ago to dissolve that commission. And as soon as I saw the bill come up on the bills to be introduced list, I called the sponsor and was like, hey, look, this is life or death. It wasn't a call. I called and didn't get an answer. So I sent this email, right? And he and I have had a good working relationship for years. I was like, look, dude, this entity saved my life, period. Like, I wouldn't be here without him. Not only should you, you know, take this bill out of legislative action, but you need to fully fund them. Like, $1 million a year is not a high enough operating budget. Like, give them 10. That's nothing, right? Like, I mean, when they were talking about the COVID money, right? Like, I've tried to get some of that money allocated for the illness commission.
That'd be fantastic, right?
They said
they
can't do that. No, they couldn't do it.
Too many potholes to fill that.
But when I asked for that bill to be pulled, he pulled it from legislative action that night. So, you know, the commission still exists. They're still doing their thing.
Yes, that's what you do.
What was the rationale to cut the funding for this program?
He told me when I initially reached out, you know, he responded immediately, was like, I am so sorry. I had no idea. He said I was under the understanding that this commission was already like defunct. They weren't doing anything. And
so
I was
misinformation.
Like, yeah, it was just bad information. He was operating under bad information.
To get him to do what they wanted him to do.
Right. Like,
they,
we have this
fill
mentality.
A budget hole somewhere else. So we're going to cut this, you know, 900,000 out of this and stick it in this.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm very grateful that he listened and pulled that from. So they're still helping people, but they don't get to operate, you know, at the level that they had previously. So, anytime I get an opportunity to advocate for the Tiger Morton Catastrophic Illness Commission, I'm going to do it. Those people literally save lives every single day. if you are watching this podcast and you're a philanthropist or you like to, you know, donate money to good causes, I can't think of a better cause in West Virginia. They need the money. They are literally doing the work.
Absolutely. And maybe even do invite somebody from there to come talk to us about it and the types of issues. I can't imagine that cancer is the only thing that they have to deal with. I'm sure there are
a number of other catastrophic illnesses.
Yeah,
right.
I think their mission statement is, yeah, and I'm sure I'm going to fuck it up, but it's something along the lines of, you know, they exist to help terminally ill patients get the health care they need when all other avenues have been exhausted. You know, I mean, they are literally the last line of defense some people have. They were for me.
They were for you, yes.
How many West Virginians go through things like this, right? How many?
Oh, it's that's the thing. Like, I tell my story like it's some. No, this
right.
is.
This
I talk
happens
to patients,
every day.
It's every day. Yeah. Every day.
And just the environmental issues, right, that West Virginians face is enough to make you angry. And then when your politicians cut a funding for a program that is helping people, like saving lives actively.
And not just,
and you cut that funding?
Yeah.
I'm
Tom's really,
really
upset.
Angry about
I can
this.
Tell. I can tell by looking at
didn't
his
you
face.
Know
he
that
is so mad
I,
right
I,
now.
I, but I'm how really would angry the, about this. And I knew nothing about this before, but it's just you know, my mother died of cancer. She was a rock star, okay? I wish your mom and my mom could hang out because dude,
could listen to Public Enemy together.
Oh,
bad
well,
bitches,
they,
man.
You know, she was more of the Wilson Pickett, Motown kind of lady.
I am here
and,
for
and,
that.
And she would driving around in a big, long, white Cadillac with red leather interior, just blasting that Wilson Pickett. You know what I mean? That was my mama, and you know,
the gangsters
she died.
That these men came
she,
from.
Oh,
I swear.
Listen, Lindsay met my mom briefly a couple
Twice.
Of times.
She was real sick when I met her. But
and
she was something else, man, powerful. Yeah. Her presence was just powerful.
And she was psychic. She was a full blown psychic. And would know things, right? She told me once that I would have one son. I have a vasectomy and my wife has had a full hysterectomy. I have
one
son.
We ain't getting no more.
My mother met Lindsay. Yeah. And the next time she saw her, she said, "You're going to marry my son.
And you're going to have a kid." And I'm like, "Well, chill, lady. We've been together like 6 months.
Can you back it down about 20% here?"
Yeah. I know I'm just, fabulous.
Look,
but,
I'm just here for a good time, honey. Yeah. He just took me to Florida. I'm just having fun.
And, you know, so she fought cancer for, man, 7-8 years.
Long time.
And, you know, double mastectomy. They missed a part. It was on her rib, so it spread to her lungs, and she was a lifelong smoker until she was 40, 41, something like that. So her lungs were vulnerable, and so then it just and shot all through her body. And, you know, so I've seen firsthand what catastrophic illness can do to a family and a person. And she was the linchpin of my family. And such a powerful, wonderful person, right? And for funding for things like that to just disappear because of whatever bullshit they made up.
Well, you know that I was able to get my cancer treatments through the...
Right, the Affordable Care Act.
The Affordable Care Act. And something told me the beginning of the year, because in January is when you can like re-up your and you can change your plan. And something told me the beginning of that year, I was like, I'm going to change my plan. And I thought it was for Tom because Tom had been having like, he said he was having like some chest pains or whatever. And I'm like, we ain't getting no younger. I'm going to get the Cadillac version.
And I was overweight. So
we were trying to get healthy.
I used to weigh like 285 or something.
But
right?
I re-upped my, when I did my insurance in January, I got the best kind that they had. And it was still only $200 a month with the health insurance and the dental. And I think what a lot of people don't understand is you still pay for that insurance.
Yeah. Well, for sure.
It's not free. It's not Medicaid.
You pay your copays, you pay your copays and your premiums and all of these.
And you still get medical bills. Yes. It's just you have insurance
that is affordable.
Which it's affordable.
That's the part that wears me out. You know, I've advocated for universal health care since I got sick.
I wouldn't have had cancer treatment because I was working at a small production company where they didn't offer health insurance. So, and we were both working there and we didn't have a job where we had insurance. So we had to buy it through that. And I got the insurance because the year before that, the insurance was really crappy. I was like, oh God, I'm changing it. And so that was in January and I got diagnosed March 1st.
Well,
so something told me.
So talk about being psychic, right? Yeah. I am going to say this in front of the four of you because recent events lately that have led us to this table show that listen to your instincts.
Always.
Listen to your gut. Listen to, you know, when you have that sense of I need to follow up on this, I need to do this as it pertains to your health care, as it pertains to your insurance plans, like this is another aspect of our innate natural humanity that we've gotten away from. We know things. Yeah, we know things.
Your mountain witch grandmothers were correct.
They were correct, yeah. Right. Like sure. Our granny witches in the woods knew things and knew, and when you're tapped into people, and I'm hearing these sons who are very connected to their mothers, and you have a son that we've had different discussions about how connected you are to your son. And I have a son. I hope he's that connected to me one day. I feel like we are. I always say our hearts are like puzzle pieces that are locked together no matter where we are. Mm-hmm. Our hearts are together, you know. But I want to honor that, too, that a big part of the reason we're in the position we're in is we've ignored that for a long time.
We have.
We've ignored our instincts, and we've ignored our gut feelings, and we've ignored I have a feeling moments, you know, and I think we need to stop doing that. And we need to start honoring and saying how we know that's right is look at this. You know, in this moment, I knew I need to make a different decision. And I did because it paid
off.
And
I've been doing that recently. Good. I've been telling myself whatever my gut tells me, I'm just going to do it. And I'm just going to go with the flow and I'm going to see where it leads me. And it hasn't steered me wrong yet.
And
you know,
if our elected politicians would listen to their guts and their hearts
instead of their wallets,
instead of rhetoric and money and whatever else influence they have on them, I think it would be a better world. Because how could you do that? How could you just write off multiple people's lives?
It's out of sight, out of mind. It's just a piece of paper for them. It's just a vote for them.
I'm a firm believer that capitalism is the cancer. we could go on an entire podcast rant talk.
I'm kind of glad that you said that because I think that's a good place to stop. Because I think what it does is it gives us a jumping off point for next time.
Yeah.
Will you come talk to us again?
100%. Anytime. I'll talk to you all about anything, anytime. I'm an open book and I love talking shit.
I just want to say that, like, I do too. I appreciate, like, you've heard me every time I talk about Rusty, I just kind of like go like this. I'm like, you just got to meet him and talk to him to understand. Like, it's kind of like y'all. I can't describe y'all, but y'all are as Appalachian as it gets, right? Like, you're just about as authentic as you come. And when I tell people, I'm like, no, you just got to meet him and talk to him and listen to him. I want this conversation to continue because I think even just this thing we've tapped onto here with this Tiger Morton Catastrophic Commission.
I think that's a whole podcast in itself.
Not only that, but how do we drive attention to this and how do we drive funds to this? Because anything that has the word catastrophic in its title is relevant and meaningful for a reason. It's been created for a reason, right? And so given our catastrophic things that happen to us in this state, that's a word we use a lot, right? So I want to wrap us up today because I have hung out with this man. Literally, we carved a whole day out one time to just sit for 8 hours. I think we took a lunch break and talked all through lunch.
Yeah, we could literally talk for a week.
We could have gone on and on. And
well, we'll schedule another day.
So let me ask something before we adjourn here. Have you heard the telepathy tapes?
I have not.
Okay.
I wish you would
check them out.
Do yourself a favor and find the telepathy tapes on whatever podcast platform you use and check it out and let me know what you think.
Yeah,
so we got two topics to circle back on next time. And thank you so much, Rusty.
Yes.
Thank you for your
time.
Thank
you for coming here or letting us come to you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for all your advocacy with everything, because a lot of work that you have done has really benefited me. Because I got diagnosed with cancer in 2022, and I was able to get medical marijuana. And I did not have any pain pills during my chemotherapy, and I am a former opiate addict.
That's amazing.
I need to thank you personally. And I felt like I needed to do that, and thank you.
Hey, I appreciate you sharing that. I really do. It's been a wild ride.
It's important work, and very few people have the skills and the ability and the knowledge and the wherewithal and the determination and the ADHD and OCD to make it all happen, you know, but you happen to be one of them, and I'm proud to know you, and I'm grateful for this conversation. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Yes.
Right back at you. And I want to say thank you to all of you for creating this platform, right? These kind of stories, I know that, like, this has been kind of just like a loose conversation, right?
That's what we are.
And I appreciate this format. These are the stories that, you know.
I can't take notes. She's, look at me. I open my computer.
And we stared at a pretty picture the whole time.
I just look professional.
That's what I was using the computer for. I'm keeping my eye on the time. But.
See, and I thought both of you were looking at it because there was like some really important information
on
there.
Oh, yeah, all notes there. About Rusty on here. So.
My whole like big dossier on my dumbass.
No, all right, but. Gentlemen, this is Appalachian Living. This is Getting Around Talking, and we will continue this conversation. So,
looking forward to the next time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Stay tuned. Appalachian Living is sponsored in part by Wade Law Firm, PLLC. Sage Stitch Finance Corporation, representing wisdom in mending what we already have, providing gap funds for resilient renovations.
Appalachian Living is also brought to you by Hope Money Coaching, rescuing you from financial chaos and leading you to a path of financial wellness. Minimalist Gym, helping men and women navigate their health and fitness without restrictive fad diets.